This program is part of the Cosmic Potato Podcast Network. For more shows like this, visit our website at cosmicpotato.com.
For over 50 years, the Star Trek franchise has arguably been the gold standard in science fiction, offering fans an optimistic vision of the future, where the problems that plague us today have long since been put behind us. Growing from a canceled television series to multimedia cultural institution with no end in sight, Star Trek has not only impacted the lives of fans around the world, but helped to mold them, guide them, and sometimes even save them. These are the stories of those fans. This is their prime direction. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of The Prime Direction, the show with still no written intro, but hey, that's half the fun, isn't it? Just making it up as you go. It's already a bad intro. You can feel it. You can feel when it starts. It's a bad intro, but we're gonna push through it anyway. After a brief vacation from the show while the ward room was having a new coat of paint and some new carpeting installed, we're back in the ward room with the host of Into the Wormhole, a Deep Space Nine discussion podcast. Is it a Star Trek discussion podcast? Is it a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast? What's your subtitle? I know it's Into the Wormhole.
It used to just be a DS9 podcast, but we pivoted it to just be it, like the main show is DS9 focused. But I think it's more of a Star Trek podcast because we do other Star Trek stuff. We do, TNG and whatever other Star Trek thing strikes our fancy. But yeah, it's primarily DS9. Either description I think is accurate.
And you've also covered the first season of Discovery episode by episode, that was a good time too.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that was fun.
So he's here, folks, the host of Into the Wormhole. We have Poey Gordon here in the wardroom today. How's it going?
It's going well. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, I'm glad you could make it. I've been listening to Into the Wormhole since Way of the Warrior.
Wow.
Which is the two-part premiere of season 4. And it you guys have covered, since I started listening at least, you've covered season 4. You covered season 1 of Discovery all the way through. And now deep into season 5, I would think. I can't remember what episode in 5th season you guys are in for DS9.
Yeah, but I think we just recorded MPOC Nor. I could be wrong. We might have just posted it. I'm not sure where we're at in terms of, because we tried to record ahead, so I don't know where we're at. Mm-hmm. But we're in the home stretch, 2 seasons left. So
where it really starts getting good. Oh, personally, I thought that season 4 is really when it settled into its groove, pointed itself in the direction of the finale, and I personally think that DS9 picked up speed from that point straight through to the end. Maybe not everyone agrees. There's, a bit of a stumble going from season 6 into season 7. Some people disagree with that. Some people think that casting change was great. I don't always agree.
Oh, man, yeah. I have thoughts on that, but it's an unfortunate timing, I think, for that. But I think, by and large, the show... conventional old thought is that season 4 through 7 are kind of the gold standard. I do think that you kind of need 1 through 3 to really appreciate all the things that happened in those last 4 seasons.
Oh, absolutely.
There's just something about it's something that we kind of noticed. Like the show definitely gets more confident in season 4, but first 3 seasons, I mean, it's, you really get attachment to those characters and you kind of need that.
Yeah, the week-to-week stories may not be the strongest or the most engaging or compelling, but those first 3 seasons are going to get you familiar enough with the characters that when they really start putting all their focus on the storytelling, you already love the characters so much that it deepens the entire experience. They got the busy work out of the way by introducing you to the characters and making you care about them, so the story can take its time to be that much more involved.
Yeah, absolutely.
For the last couple seasons.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I would say season 1 through 3, you know, maybe find like a list of essential episodes and watch those if you've never taken the plunge. Because I'm always surprised how many people haven't seen DS9 or just never really give it the time of day. But it's the height of Star Trek. I really think so.
Yeah, absolutely. It's my personal favorite of all the series. I've seen TNG more, but I prefer the storytelling of DS9. They let, especially in those last several seasons, they let the storytelling become more mature. Not to say that TNG was a kid's show, but it was a product of its time for sci-fi television in the late 80s, early 90s. Not a whole lot of stakes, really. And, you know, compared to modern sci-fi television, where the stakes are even higher, so it does make DS9 look a little tame in comparison. But when it came out, I mean, they're literally at war, and they're telling war stories, which you didn't see in Star Trek before. That's the maturity level that DS9 let them push to, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah, and the serialization, too, you really see it kind of forming the model for a lot of more modern sci-fi and genre television, like in a way that it was, you know, DS9 was an evolution of Trek, the way that TNG was an evolution of TOS, and Discovery is also an evolution of Trek. And it's just like, they're kind of, even Enterprise to a lesser extent, you know, especially in its later seasons, really starts to pick up that baton of the serialization, mm-hmm. and the ongoing arcs. And, you know, TNG just wasn't really trying to play in that wheelhouse. And right. The landscape just wasn't really there for it. And it's sort of kind of what held DS9 back a little bit in terms of ratings and the network and all that. But it's you can really see the bits of how it was the next step of what Trek should have been, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why season 3 of Enterprise, for me, is my favorite. The season-long Zindi arc, it's my favorite season of Enterprise because they told one big story.
Yeah, that's what Mikey, other Into the Wormhole co-host, he's a big Enterprise guy. I've actually never seen all of Enterprise. I fell off the first couple seasons very early on. And I'm sure, like a lot of people with DS9, I just never picked it back up. And he's always trying to get me, you got it, season 3. Season 3 is the best one. And we've done a couple of Enterprise episodes. And I can kind of see, you can see that connective tissue where it's like, yeah, this is, they're aiming a little bigger. And we'll get to it at some point. I'm hopeful to check it out.
Yeah, well, I'll keep on listening until you do that.
Awesome, awesome.
But then once you do it, I'm gonna unsubscribe.
That's the goal. Yeah, that's why we're waiting. We really want to wring out the last bit of audience we can, and then move on to something else.
All right. We've heard a bit about your opinions of a couple different Star Trek series. We know that you're a host of a DS9 podcast, but just in general, because I find it easier to just ask rather than to give listeners any sort of an introduction or a bio on the people I'm interviewing.
Sure.
I just let them do it themselves. So take a moment, if you like, and share with the Prime Direction listeners a little bit about yourself. Anything you like. Who is Poey Gordon?
Let's see. I live in San Francisco. I moved out here for grad school, finished that, and never left. I'm a podcaster, kind of lapsed writer, I guess you could say, lapsed poet. I don't know. Avid toy collector. I don't know. I'm not good at the bio, but I think that honestly sums it up. I think that's all you need to know.
Well, I think the fact that someone who actually went to grad school, and you've already found a very quick and easy way to one up the host. So you win on that one.
Well, you know, I'd say you have the advantage of me in that you don't have the crippling debt hanging over your head. So,
oh no, see, I found a way to get crippling debt with just attaining 2 associate's degrees.
There you go. Yeah.
I found my hidden talent, 2 associate's degrees that helped me out not one bit in my day-to-day life. But hey, I still got debt for decades.
Yeah, it just compounds. I figure, you know, I'm going to die at some point, and then they won't be able to harass me anymore. So good luck with that, guys. But like any good millennial, well, I'm steeped in debt. So
Right. Well, I'm still trying to fend off that particular label myself. I've done the reading, I've done the looking, and for so long, I thought that I was a Gen Xer, and now I got websites telling me that I'm a millennial. I said, no. I found a few that say, because there's a few years at the end of the Gen X age, at the beginning of the millennial age, where we are called Zillennials.
I've heard that.
I'm not sure if I find that. I'm not sure if I like that better, but
yeah, that's almost it's almost worse in a way. But yeah, I mean, yeah, I was looking at the birth range is like 81 to 96, so that's a long time. So like, you know, I think when people hear millennials, there's still that knee jerk reaction of like, oh, it's someone in the 20s. But no, like, you know, I'll be 35 this year. So like, I feel like that's kind of old. So it's mm-hmm. you know, millennials are in their 40s basically.
Yeah, that's what they're saying. I just turned 40 a couple months ago, and I'm holding on to the fact that I'm 40, and I remember being the first kid that I knew that upgraded from a Commodore 64 to a Commodore 128.
Oh,
so
wow.
I'm going to hold on to that. Yeah. I hold on to that and call myself a Gen Xer.
To me, if you have specific memories of the Commodore 64, then I feel like that's Gen X. But that is yeah. If you can cite specific things of that, that's Gen X for sure. Don't let them take that away from you.
Right. Now I've got backup on it, so I'm definitely gonna stick with that.
Yeah.
I remember the text based Incredible Hulk video game.
Oh yeah.
From Quest Probe.
Yeah, the cassette tapes for the sound and.
Oh yeah.
You had to enter in the little key. Yeah, the little like code to start the game. Oh man.
Okay, we're about to spawn a whole new podcast off of this, so we're gonna put a pin in our Commodore 64
yes,
talk.
Gonna
get back to Star Trek. Move on to the first proper question of the show, which is always to ask you, the guest, take us back in time a little bit and share with us what's your earliest, not your best, not your defining, but your earliest Star Trek memory.
So. I feel like Star Trek has always been this like background radiation. So I feel like it's like always been aware of. I don't remember like the specific moment that I was aware of it as a thing. The one that I always point to is I remember watching TNG with my dad, and this is like well before my fandom started to kind of take hold, but I remember it was the Best of Both Worlds part one, and it was that cliffhanger, that famous, you know, Mr. Worf fire. And I just remember my dad mm-hmm. freaking out a little bit. And I'm like, oh, this is a big deal. And that just kind of always stuck with me. And then later I learned why that was a big deal. But that's the one that I always think of because it's the one that I realized it was like, I kind of always knew what Star Trek was. It was at that point where it was like sort of in the pop culture. You always heard the you know, beam me up, Scotty kind of stuff. It was always sort of there. It's weird. I could tell you my specific Star Wars memories and when that kind of became a thing, but with Star Trek, it was always just sort of this subtle thing, just kind of waiting in the background for me to find it. And that's the one that I always think of.
That's definitely a strong early memory. If you're going to have one that's first, then that's definitely a good one to have. One of the highlight moments of that entire series.
Oh, for
honestly.
Sure. Yeah. That's sort of a defining moment of that series, I think.
And it sounds like your dad's reaction was about the same as, well, most of the Star Trek fans that you talk to when you ask him, so how about that season 3 finale? Oh, my God. Oh, we didn't know what to do with ourselves because you got to wait the entire summer before you get new episodes in the fall. Now, sure, back then it was only like, what, 3, 4, maybe 5 months.
Maybe
not
five
like
months,
today where
yeah,
you're
I
waiting,
mean,
you know, 10, 11 months before you get new episodes.
Sure.
It was a much shorter wait back then, but still. Once he said fire and those credits came up, no one knew what to do with themselves until fall came around.
Yeah, and I think for me, the part of the reason, like looking back on it, I think of that moment partly because my dad wasn't a huge Star Trek fan. It was a thing he watched as a kid. He kind of watched the movie. It was just very casual. It was just sort of the thing that you watch. But to me, when I think about it now, it was just sort of evidence of how big TNG was. It was a show. Like that was the water cooler show. Everybody watched it. It was like Super mm-hmm. Bowl TV. It wasn't like... You know, it wasn't the sort of niche nerd thing that a lot of people sort of became to think it was in the 90s. It was a monoculture. We all had one, you know, a few channels and we all watched the same stuff. And, you know, I remember seeing TV guide things for it and like, you know, like what's going to happen. And it was everywhere. So everybody watched that. He was just evidence of that. He wasn't a big Star Trek fan, but that was just the thing you did. You watched Star Trek Next Generation, you know, for the first few seasons when it was huge. And, it just sort of became this like larger than life thing.
Yeah, back in the in the early 90s, it was, I think, a lot more mainstream than people give it credit for, more mainstream than people remember.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I mean, you know, the biggest evidence to point to that is, like, one, the first season, the first episode had, like something like 30 million viewers or something. Like, it was literally Super Bowl numbers. Like, you will never have a TV show with that kind of audience again. And, you know, evidence of how popular it was, it got two spinoffs. It got Voyager and DS9. Like, they don't make those unless TNG is a monster hit. So, like, that was, it was definitely not a niche thing. It was a mainstream, massive mega hit. And that's why they had the confidence to feel like, oh, we could make these spinoffs and we'll make money off them.
All right, let's focus in a little bit. We were talking about early memories, and you mentioned that Star Trek was for you kind of a background thing. There was always a presence of it around you, but you didn't hook into it and really latch on right away. It took a while. But what was it, if it was something other than that first memory of watching Best of Both Worlds Part 1, if it was something else, what was it that really hooked into you for Star Trek? And was it like an instant going from, oh, this is just a presence that's in my life, blink of an eye, now it's really important? Or did it hook into you and then grow on you over time? And what was it that first latched on?
I remember seeing it a lot on syndication, especially TNG, and I would just see it like, there's a specific programming block that would have like a back-to-back TNG hour. It was The Simpsons was one thing that I was latch on to because it was on like 4 hours a day on one of my local affiliates. And then another affiliate also had a lot of TNG. And this is well after, I don't say well after, but it was definitely like either near the end of its run or maybe even after. And I would just kind of watch it when it was on there, like after school. And it was sort of like this thing where I just remember, oh, I like this. And then the thing that really for me took off when DVR started to become a thing, and I had access to it, I could record all of the episodes and watch them at one time. And that's when I remember really like sitting down and blowing through. I actually watched Voyager. Voyager was the first one that I ever watched like all the way through live. Like at DS9, I popped in and out of, but Voyager I remember watching live, and I remember watching the finale. That was the one that I remember. That was like my first Star Trek one. Even though I have like the most criticisms of it, that was the one I remember. I was watching that every week. And then eventually I was DVRing it every single week. And Voyager was, I think, really the one that grabbed me. I'm not sure why. I think it just happened to be, it sort of happened to line up with where I was kind of in the fandom and where it kind of like became a thing. Like, oh, this is a new show. And I don't know. I don't know what it was. It might have been just the flashiness of UPN. Actually, if I really think about it, it might have had to do with wrestling at some level, because that was kind of around. That was on UPN around that time too. And I don't know, but I do remember watching Voyager live and like seeing every episode of that pretty much from week to week.
It was for me. I always thought that Voyager was kind of the unfortunate moment for me because, after all these years, I can't even remember what it was exactly that was taking up more of my time and making it more difficult for me to, sit down and just watch Star Trek as it was coming on. I'd have to go back and look at the years and when things were happening, but I wonder, I am now finding myself wondering if my brother leaving to attend college in Ohio, it might have made it less of a less appointment viewing for the whole family to sit down and watch Star Trek. Sure. Like we had been for years. And that might have been it. With him gone, it's just the three of us. Maybe it was less of a priority to sit down and watch Star Trek. So a few seasons into Deep Space Nine, which probably lines up with right about the beginning of Voyager.
Yeah, about is when I started four, yeah.
Right. Is when I started not having quite as much time for Star Trek and I wasn't watching it live anymore. I had to go back years later and catch up on DS9 and Voyager. But we would always sit down together, and not only would we watch Star Trek, but even if we're watching it live, this was before the days of DVR, and even after it was introduced, we didn't have it in the house for a long time. I don't think my parents got a DVR system until after I moved out, like well after I moved out. But we would record the episodes on VHS.
Oh, yeah.
And I think I've talked about this on previous episodes of the show, where we would have a library of like a few dozen VHS tapes, each one with up to 6 episodes of mainly TNG, but we got a couple seasons of Deep Space Nine as well. And at this point, I'm not even sure where those tapes are anymore. They might be in the closet of my office here for all I know. I can't keep track of them, but there were so many. And, you know, if there was not an episode playing on television and someone felt an urge for Star Trek, be it myself or even my dad, would just throw in one of those tapes. We've seen this episode, 8 times? That's fine. Watch it again.
Yeah, and you know, I would do that with The Simpsons, and I remember finding some those VHSs like at a visit home a while ago. And the thing I really wish I had kept with those was the commercials. And I'm sure, like, you know, like at the time, you know, you probably do the same thing. You don't want to keep the commercials. You want to, you know, keep those out of the episode. But mm-hmm. it's interesting how now it's like this time capsule. Like, I wish I could see all those old commercials from the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Those are the best part. Plenty of them on those videotapes. I think we got into the habit of not pausing the VCR. Oh my God, pausing the VCR.
Oh yeah.
I am 40 indeed. But we would pause the VCR while the commercials were playing, so that would essentially edit those out. But when it happened just one too many times where someone would forget to unpause.
Yep.
When the show came back, so we're missing like the first 3 minutes of the next act because no one unpaused the thing. We said, okay, that's it. We're just keeping the commercials in. You can fast forward when you rewatch it.
Play it safe that way,
But now we're going to have all those, you know, classic commercials for, you know, whatever toys were being sold, or considering when Star Trek was on primetime, it's going to be, you know, the trailers for whatever movies are coming out in the early 90s.
Yeah.
That's a wonderful time capsule. But speaking of toy commercials, this segues nicely into the next question, because you said yourself, a toy collector was one of the descriptors that you used when talking about yourself.
Yeah.
So what is or was your relationship when it comes to merchandising for Star Trek? And it doesn't have to be just toys. We can also be talking about, decorations, clothes, things like that.
You know, with the Star Trek merchandise, it's actually never been a thing I've latched on to much with toys or clothes or anything else. So growing up, I was sort of like this like line between as a kid, you know, I got toys and I played with them, but I also had like this collector mentality, and I would like display them and I would keep them. I would open them because I thought they were meant to be played with, but I would keep some of the packaging. At the time, I was really into like Kenner, Star Wars, Power of the Force, and like X-Men toys. And I would see Star Trek toys all the time, but they just never appealed to me. And I think it was a combination of just the packaging. I don't really think I liked the packaging art. And I don't actually think I liked the sculpts on those toys. So I just never really grabbed on. And I also remember a point when you would see toys like for the whatever movie was coming out. And, you know, you'd see like, you know, First Contact toys and all that stuff. But like they always had that same squat the Playmates era toys. And they never grabbed me. And then as I got older and my collecting started to get more refined, I was always looking for, okay, what Star Trek toys can I buy? And there was a line of Art Asylum toys back in, I want to say the 2000s. And that's probably the gold standard, for Star Trek toys for my book. And I always wanted to buy those. The problem with them is that you can only really ever get them at like either specialty shops or you could maybe sometimes toys have them. So they were kind of pricey, and I was collecting other toy lines at the time. So the Star Trek toys always kind of fell on the wayside. And it's always kind of bummed me out. I feel like Star Trek like merchandise, there is an audience for like the diehard collectibles of like ornaments and cosplay and like uniform replications and posters and stuff. But like, I don't know, for like toys and like props and stuff, that stuff's always like kind of, I feel like priced me out a little bit. It's always like, you know, like I remember Diamond Select did a line of like phasers and stuff sometime back in the mid 2000s and pretty pricey. So I just never really, you know, I just never really grabbed onto it. And it's always been, it's a noticeable blind spot in my collection shelf. Actually, like I have right now, I have a McFarlane Kirk and McFarlane Picard, and I think they're pretty good as far as toys go. They do some specific things that McFarlane does that I don't love. So, it's just always been this weird blind spot. Like, I've never been able to grab onto, like, the shirts or anything. And, like, I've never been super into, like, Star Trek decoration. I don't know. It's just, for a thing that I love so much, it's I feel like a lot of the collectibles that I want are kind of lacking in a specific kind of way. But I've always found ways to like have it like infect other parts of my fandom. Like it'll be like a background sound on my computer. Like my email alert at work for a couple coworkers is the TNG like door chime. Like I always find, like, you know, I've had tons of wallpapers on my computer. I always try to like get an Elcar system on my phone. You know, like I always try to, like, it's always been this thing where it's never like a tangible product, but it's always like something I'm trying to infect it. Like I need something to be Star Trek in some other way.
I've got at work, I work at night, and my job is going to consist of sitting at a desk, and I'm watching monitors. Working as a security guard, I got security cameras up, and I've got a minimum of 4 monitors up in front of me that I have to work off of, sometimes up to 6. And if you close out all the application windows that I have open on all those screens, all 4 of those monitors, the wallpaper in the background is the seal for the United Federation of Planets.
There you go.
With some Elcar's writing underneath it and bars at the top and bottom. So it kind of looks like a Starfleet computer. I've been crossing my fingers for years, hoping that one of these days, Apple will devise and release a workable Elcar's user interface. Like an overlay that'll work with iOS.
Oh yeah, that'd be amazing, yeah. Something that just works like the way you'd want it to. It's never quite happened. Even like the kind of ones you can find at Windows and stuff, they're always like, there's always a jank with them where I get bored with them after. I had one for Winamp back in the day, I remember, and it was still kind of janky, but it was fun. But you know, more like kind of trying to play the video games when I can, trying to get the interactivity with that kind of stuff. Was always like the toy has never spoke to me, unfortunately. I wish they had, because there's so many of them, and
yeah,
it seems like something that, like, I've got like a Morn figure, and that's about it in terms of like the old Playmate stuff.
Which I, like. I have that one too.
It's a good figure. It's as far as those ones go. The good thing about the old Playmate Star Trek toys is they're dirt cheap now, so it's not hard to jump back into it.
Exactly. My wife, I can't remember if I told this story on this show before, but my wife had gotten me, I think it was last year, so for my 39th birthday, she had found online and drove 2 hours one way to pick this up. She had found a fairly close approximation replica of the Sword of Kalis.
Oh, nice.
Now, it didn't have the engravings on it, and it wasn't the same color. It was, you know, essentially the color of a standard Batleth, but the cut and design of the Sword of Kalis. So it wasn't just the, you know, the simple curve with the handles and the points, but it had that extra, you know, inside curve with more points inside. She had gotten one of those, and the guy who was selling it, when she showed up to pick it up, he said, you know, I got this box here with some extra Star Trek stuff, you know, basically mainly action figures and a few other items. And he said, you know, for an extra 50, I'll give you this. And she said, and it was true. She said, all I have is a $20 bill on me. He said, deal. So she got this box of action figures. So I got Sisko as a Klingon from the season 5 premiere of DS9.
Oh, yeah.
Got Zefram Cochrane. I got Admiral McCoy from Encounter at Farpoint.
Oh, yeah.
Got a few small models and, you know, like a... What is that? Probably like a 10-inch Kirk and Spock. And amongst all this stuff, there was Morn in package from DS9, the Playmates action figure.
Nice.
And I was about to open him up because, you know, some of these toys, especially the packaging, is a little bit dingy. I'll go ahead and take them out and display them, because to display them and show them off and love them is more important than preserving them, because it's not like they're going to be going for top dollar anytime in the future.
Yeah, there's very few ones that do in that line.
Exactly. Yeah,
very few.
So I was about to open up the packaging for Morn, and then I saw something that looked like it like shimmered a little bit when I moved it. I was moving it under the light. I said, hold on a second. I took a closer look, and it almost blended in perfectly because the color scheme of the package, and it was in gold Sharpie, but it was the actor in the Morn suit, who is inside the suit for every episode of DS9. He had signed the packaging.
That's amazing. Wow.
So this guy's staying in the package, and he's hanging up on the wall right now.
Yeah.
Autograph Morn. Mark Allen Shepard, yep.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And he's right next to the Ninja Turtles Star Trek crossover figure of
those are great.
Spock Donatello.
Yeah, those are great. I remember seeing those when I worked at a comic store, and I didn't know that they existed. And I was like, oh, wait, of course, because Playmates owned the Turtles and they had the license for Star Trek. So, of course, they do a crossover. And I've always wanted to redo those because those things are awesome.
Yeah.
It's like the perfect blend of those two properties for sure.
And I've only got the one, but he's still worth it. Definitely worth putting up on the wall for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Toys are fun. This is another podcast. I think we could just like make a whole, at least a mini series, just talking about Star Trek merchandising and the toys.
But oh yeah.
We're gonna leave it behind for now. We're gonna move on to the fandom and the expression of the fandom. Now, we're talking toys, and like you said, it's a blind spot on your shelf because you never really got into the main swing of the Star Trek toys, because let's be honest, they had a hard time figuring out exactly what they wanted to market. It was not an action heavy show, but they're marketing action figures like kids are going to want to create their own action packed adventures on the floor with these characters who are really great at diplomacy.
Yeah, if you watch the old toy commercials, you can tell they didn't know how to do it. And like even the accessories they come with, and like there's a real push and pull between, trying to sell them to the boys, 6 to 11 age audience and collectors. And I really think the only reason those toy lines last as long as they did is because there was a sizable collector audience. And
yeah,
when they figured out, let's just cater to them and stop trying to get after the kids, it did a little better. But
And they got their second life that way, that's for sure.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You can go out and get whichever figures that you want. I was able to get the entire senior staff from the Generations line when they had the uniforms that they designed and they made, but they decided to scrap them and use the standard TNG and DS9 uniforms instead of this new design they came up with. But the toys were already made, so they're out there floating around with this new uniform design that we've never seen on screen.
Yeah.
I was able to get those. I put those on the shelf in my office because that's one of the things that I want to express. And especially in the last several years, I've wanted to express my fandom, not in an obnoxious way, but in a way that's not at all hidden. I want people to be able to see that I'm a Star Trek fan. The hat that I wear most often outdoors, it's got the Federation logo on the front. The year that the Federation was established is written on the side of it. I'll wear that out anywhere, just hoping that someone will notice it and say, nice hat. So for you, in this day and age, and also in the past, how would you go about expressing your fandom? Would you be proud about it? Would you kind of keep it under the radar and only share it with people that you know were going to get it? How did you end up expressing that to the world?
We're back in the really through elementary, middle, and high school. I wouldn't say I was ashamed, but there definitely was a stigma associated with it. And none of my friends were Star Trek fans. We were, we were all Star Wars fans. That was our thing that we latched onto. Star Trek was the nerdy thing. And I liked it through that point. Like, it had been a thing. Okay, well, I sort of secretly watched it. Like, it wasn't like a secret, but I just never had anyone to talk about with it. It wasn't until kind of getting older and finding friends outside of those circles where I was able to sort of express I love Star Trek. Star Trek's great. And, finding that stuff on the internet and social media. And, now I'm at a point, I'm, completely comfortable because I'm a, 35-year-old man. But more of my life was sort of spent it was this thing I kept to myself because I just never had an outlet for it. And I knew that Star Trek fans existed. I knew it wasn't this, thing just for me. But I just, those people weren't around me. So, and the only really depictions of them I ever saw were, things like Trekkies and, the sort of, more extreme eras of or sections of the fandom, which really aren't, in hindsight, aren't really that crazy, but they were depicted as such in the movie.
Right.
But they're really not that ridiculous. But so it really wasn't until I think the thing that really set off was when we started the podcast, and it was the thing. The whole idea was okay, I love Star Trek, and our friend Ben loves Star Trek. He's no longer on the podcast, but our friend Vincent hates. He doesn't. He at the very least, he doesn't. He's never seen any of it. don't know if he hated it, but he had always this like marked indifference. And at this point, you know, Netflix, DS9 had been on Netflix for a few years now, and I already watched like two or three times, and I was like, God, this is so good. I'm like, and I just know, like, I'm like, this guy would love this show if he just gave it a chance, and he's never going to otherwise. So like having that podcast and like having to sort of promote it and, you know, interact with like the Star Trek fandom on Twitter and other like segments of the internet really kind of reinvigorated it. And it opened me up to like a whole new level of Star Trek fandom where it was like, yeah, these people are everywhere. And, you know, they think a lot of things that I do and they think some things I don't. And like, they're opening up to new perspectives on it. And, you know, now it's just, yeah, it's a, we've been doing the podcast for 3 years now. It's just sort of like, it's just there. It's, I love Star Trek and I you know, I have a Star Trek podcast, and anyone that asks, I'm happy to tell them all about Star Trek and my thoughts on it. And, you know, my thoughts on Discovery and all these new shows. And it just, it's a far cry from, you know, when I was younger and I was just like, oh yeah, Captain Picard. I don't know. He's just there.
Yeah. I guess he's kind of cool.
I guess
and
he's
then
cool,
the
instant yeah.
The instant they step out of earshot, you're like, and I would do anything for him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Do you remember that era, too, when Family Guy started to hit? And it was the first time I'd really seen a show, aside from, like, Clerks, where you saw, like, that kind of, like, nerd conversation happening on a television thing or on a movie. I remember that Family Guy would reference Star Trek a lot, and it was a thing that, like, oh, I get these references. They're referencing things that I recognize. This is for me. And it was the first time I felt like they were showing that in a pop culture setting where it wasn't like an SNL skit where the butt of the joke is they're saying technobabble. It was actually like, it was clearly made by someone who loves these things. And I remember that standing out a little bit. And that was sort of the end of high school, maybe 99, 98. So that stood out to me. Like, oh, this is a thing now. And, you know, just kind of evolved from there, I guess.
Yeah, it used to be, you know, we remember the days of the SNL skit or sketch with Shatner as the host, and he's at the convention and they're poking fun at the fans who know so much and they expect their heroes to know as much as they do.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Shatner goes off on his little rant about, you know, get a life and move out of your parents' basements, and that sketch was designed to, you know, acknowledge and sort of respect Star Trek, but at the same time make fun of the people who love it. This is not a thought that occurred to me before, I'm just having it right now, but it seems to me much in the same vein as Big Bang Theory, where it's trying to say, look, it's good to be nerdy because, you know, there are a lot of awesome things that nerds like, but this entire show is built around the concept of making fun of these nerds.
Yeah, there's no actual punchline. The joke is just they're saying nerdy things that you probably don't recognize, and they're really into them. And, you know, even that old Shatner sketch, if you think about the context of it, it actually was kind of ridiculous for Trekkies to be as diehard. It was a TV show that lasted for 3 years. At that point, there was nothing else. And so, like, for people to be that diehard about it, like, you could see how it was, I don't want to say it was ridiculous, but, like, it was a very extreme thing. Like, people were, you know, 10 years later, still obsessed with this TV show that only lasted 3 years. It's just telling how much of a phenomenon it was. Like, that's where the stigma comes from. It wasn't because Trek was particularly nerdy. It's because people wouldn't let it go. And it wasn't, there was nothing inherently wrong with Star Trek. It's just like, nobody knew it was coming back. Nobody knew it was going to be, it was just like this flash the pan, giant pop culture phenomenon. And then people just, you know, kept it alive, really. Like, those same people that didn't let it go are the reason we still have it today, honestly.
Yeah. And it, because of their intent and the strength of their devotion to it, is what carried us through long enough for Trek to have its revival in the form of Next Generation. You know, movies are one thing, but to bring it back to television, to give it another try, it wouldn't have happened if people hadn't been as devoted as they were. And because they were able to, in their way, bring it back to television, the franchise itself had a chance to catch up to the devotion that it had earned back in the 60s. So you look at it now, you have TOS, you got the animated series, you got TNG, DS9, Voyager, Enterprise, now Discovery, Picard, Lower Decks, and eventually Section 31, and I still think it's quite possible that they're going to announce a Pike series at Las Vegas, which at the time of this recording is just days away.
It's false. No way. Not this time. We created it. Not this time. No.
They might, yeah. I'm curious about it. I mean,
pure fiction.
I feel like the bone they threw was the shorts.
It's fiction.
But who knows? I mean, I'm sort of... I definitely don't mind if they make a Pike series. It's not something that I particularly want, but I think that the...
Made-up tale.
The iron is hot, so if they're going to do it, strike now.
It never happens.
People really want that Pike series. So, like, you know, it's definitely impossible. I mean, and that's the thing, too. They're at a point now where we're not getting another drought. Where, you know, Star Trek is here for the next 20 years, honestly.
Yeah, and I suspect that if and when another drought happens, it will probably be the last one.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's. I mean, we're kind of in this weird state where, like, media companies don't want to let their pop culture properties die, so they will just live on in perpetuity now. And you know, if they do die out, it might be because disinterest is at an all time high and the quality drops. But I just don't see that happening ever for any of these things. Like, they just realize that these things are cash cows and they can milk them for all they're worth. You know, for better or for worse, honestly. And I don't think it's a bad thing, but I do think it speaks to, like, oh, they actually have this property, want to do something with it, and they should. So,
yeah, what I like about conversations that happen during the show is sometimes I answer the next, or you answer the next question, we address it before I even have a chance to ask it. Because the next question on the list is asking if you ever felt that Star Trek was never coming back during any of the droughts. Now, you and I were too young to really experience and feel the drought between TOS and TNG.
Oh, sure, yeah.
But after Enterprise, we had quite a drought before Discovery came back. And sure, Trek lived on in movies and in reboot films, in comics, books, video games, things like that. But as far as on television, which is where Trek truly lives, because movies are okay, but Trek belongs on television.
That's where
it does its best work.
I agree.
And so that drought between Enterprise and Discovery... I always assumed that it would come back at some point. And I think it's probably largely because of what you already talked about with the drought between TOS and TNG. The people who loved it so much kept it alive long enough for the people who are in charge of making it to decide, you know what, let's try it again.
Yeah, I actually thought it was never coming back after Enterprise.
You thought that was going to be the end of it?
Yeah, I thought that was it. You know, Enterprise left a really bad taste in my mouth at first. I felt like they didn't know what to do with Star Trek anymore. I felt like there was a sense the audience had moved on. I felt like the people running it just didn't really care anymore. And I know they had the movies, but those have never really... Even those felt like... I mean, Nemesis, I don't particularly enjoy. But even that felt like it was like them saying, we're done. This is it. We're moving on. So I was really surprised when they announced the reboot of the Kelvinverse stuff. And I know this is jumping ahead to a later question. But I actually really loved the Kelvinverse stuff. I think it was exactly what Star Trek needed at the right time. It needed to kind of remind people that it exists and that it needs to be like this kind of fresh reimagining, because those actors can't play these characters forever. And it was just a matter of time before they did something like that. And I loved it. And I felt like, well, this is Star Trek now. Maybe they'll do a TV show based on these characters, but they'll just keep doing movies. And that obviously didn't happen. They just did the three movies. And I don't think anyone predicted Chris Pine to blow up the way he did. But
right.
And Hemsworth, too. But, yeah, I really thought, like, it's done. That period between Enterprise and the Kelvinverse, it's not coming back. And I was really... And the other thing, too, is, like, I always felt like... Eventually, there was the whole split of who owned the rights to it. Went from NBC to CBS, and I really felt like CBS just didn't care. Like they, it took the changing of the television landscapes, the shift from network syndication being the thing to cable to streaming, to allow Star Trek to come back. And I think until that happened, I'm like it's done. It's never coming back. And I was pleasantly surprised when it came back in. TOS era Kelvinverse reboot form, and I sort of thought like, well, that's it. We're gonna mine the well of the most popular, most well known era of Star Trek. Because I think really only within the past year or two, with the kind of rise of like Picard as a meme and like our generation of people who grew up on Picard, not TOS, only now we're starting to see that era where TNG is sort of the most well known Star Trek. everything up until the point was TOS was still the thing. If you asked any, if you went to a grocery store and asked 100 people who the best captain was, if you said Kirk or Picard, up until like a couple years ago, most people would have said Kirk just because they're more familiar with him.
Exactly.
You know, as big as TNG was, it's the Wayne's World quote. I've said this before, but like the Wayne's World quote is,
Yes, it's a lot like Star Trek: The Next Generation. In many ways, it's superior, but will never be as recognized as the original.
And I think that was just so true until, you know, our kind of generation grew up a little more. And now that the people who grew up on TNG are making Star Trek, it's getting this whole renaissance of like, oh, no, they want this on television and they're going to make it happen. And we're going to get streaming services and shows. And I think that's kind of why Discovery was a little bit, that's why they marketed it very heavily towards like, before Kirk, before Picard, they were still banking on, they were still unsure of like where the mass audience Trek fandom was. And they still had to, they felt like they had to rely on Kirk and Spock, like name recognition to get people in the door. That's why they said it 10, I think that's why they said it 10 years before TOS, because it was close enough to where they could still kind of play in that ballpark, you know, without stepping on anyone's toes. And now that we've kind of hit that plateau of no, people love TNG and they love Picard and it's huge. I just don't see it going anywhere because all those actors are still around. I think they're all still willing to play ball because it's not just when you start open the TNG door, you don't just get them. You get the Voyager door and the DS9 door and that whole right. generation of TV shows that have just been on Netflix and streaming services for the past 8 years. And, you know, that sort of ensures that another renaissance is happening and it's just never going anywhere.
Another benefit that they have of trying to bring some of these back now is so many of the actors from the, we'll call it the more modern series, like the 80s and 90s series. Now, some of them are not coming back. Avery Brooks is not going to come back and be Sisko.
Yeah, he won't. Nor should he, I think. I really think he was wrapped, without spoiling anything for anybody, his arc was wrapped up perfectly in that series, and
yeah.
I don't think he should come back.
Yeah, I wouldn't want him to. I saw the What We Left Behind documentary for the Fathom events when they played it in the theaters.
That season 8, though, I will say, having said just that, yeah, I don't want to come back. That season 8, they pitched that so well. If they were to make that, I would be completely fine.
It was a great pitch, and I would love to see it. But right at the end, when they have Sisko show up, that is where I had to check out from their season 8 pitch.
Yeah.
Because if for no other reason than the fact that, okay, it's a great pitch, but you could never make it happen. Everything else that they were talking about, they could do. They could put that into production. They could write it and they could get the actors back and they could film it tomorrow. But once they said, and then Sisko comes back, said, "Well, you're not going to be able to do that.
Yeah,
you're not going to get him back. So now this pitch has become impossible. Just in that last 2 minutes.
You know, though, I mean, but you know, that was always Patrick Stewart's thing. He wasn't going to come back. He left the character behind, and they brought him a story that you know that really spoke to him in a way about that character. And you know, I know Avery Brooks has very famously said he's done with the character. And in a way that too, like, you know, some people give him shit for it, but it's like, no, he's allowed to just be a job he did and move on. And like,
yeah, exactly. I don't hold it against him at all.
Yeah. And like, you know, who knows, you know, maybe if they pit him the right pitch and the right dump truck of money, who knows? I mean,
right.
I really think that that's the thing. That's what I love about it. I'm at a point now where like they've left the door open for me to think it's possible. Like that they, you know, that they are willing that it could happen. They've created that much of a, like, you know, 5 years, even 2 years ago, nobody imagined they'd make a Star Trek Picard series. We'd see 7 of 9 in a new Star Trek show. Nobody imagined that at all. So like, it's suddenly the idea that Sisko or anybody else could come back seems like maybe, you know, who knows? And I love that. I love that it's this open-ended thing where it's like, you know, he probably won't, but maybe. You know, it's just an exciting era of Star Trek. It really is a renaissance. And like, I feel so fortunate to be a part of it right now.
And they've proven to us already with the trailer for Picard that it's not going to be, you know, bringing it back for this new series, and it's a Picard series, so we have to stick within the Next Generation. Only people that showed up within the Next Generation can be on here. But what they're doing with this show is what they've been doing with the non-canon Star Trek novels for years now, which is it's not a series of Next Generation novels or a series of Voyager novels. We're going to grab the characters that serve the story, and we're going to tell the story that we want, whoever we need to put into it to make it work. So now you have, you know, a Voyager character who's showing up on Picard's series. Who knows who else is going to end up popping in there? They can now just do a Star Trek show without focusing on one ship or one crew. They bring in whoever they want, as long as they're telling the story that they want to tell. That's what has me more excited than anything else, because they can bridge from Picard to whatever era, whatever time frame, whatever series that they want.
Yeah, and I had a sort of love-hate relationship with the non-canon stuff, because I always felt like they small-worlded Star Trek a little bit, where it's like it's just an excuse for all your favorites to hang out, and there was not there wasn't always a rational reason for these people to hang out together. And I don't get that sense from the show that it's doing that. Like, Seven of Nine and Picard should absolutely have some kind of conversation at some point. Like, they have those. It's such an obvious thing. Like, yeah, these people, their lives were shaped by the Borg. They should absolutely have even if it's a 10-minute conversation, they would have, in the past 20 years, they would have interacted. So, like, and I feel like they're recognizing that stuff. It's not just like, you know, Tuvok and Riker hanging out in the same room for no reason. It's like, no, there's a reasonable explanation for why they might, you know, be together, and whatever journey Picard's on, where he's kind of getting the band back together, you might run into some of your old favorites. They're just sort of in the background. Like, they're just there. They're just part of the set dressing, and they're part of the universe. It's a living, breathing thing. And it makes it feel so much more alive that they're connecting to those things. And there's definitely part of me that, yeah, you know what? I want to see everybody. I want them all to show up. I want to know what every single character is doing. I want a detailed description of what the Doctor from Voyager has been doing for the past 20 years. Probably won't get that, but I love that, like, it's put that into me where it's like, no, now I want to see what they're all doing. I want to see what everyone's up to, and maybe they'll show up. Maybe they're just in the background manning a station. Who knows? But show me. Show me now.
I want a scene where Picard goes back to Starfleet Command and he's walking through, and it looks like maybe he's at the academy, and I want a scene of O'Brien teaching teaching an engineering course that he's been doing for 20 years.
Yes, yes.
And Picard come in and say, hey, I know you just finished your class and this might be a bit of a bother, but can you just beam me down the block to this building I need to get to? Oh, sure, Captain. Boom, done. Yeah. That's all we need to see.
Yeah,
but that, just you know, show us those little bits, which it reeks of fan service, but at the same time, being such fans as we and many other people are of TNG, of DS9, we just want that little bit. We want that little taste.
Yeah, it's not unreasonable that could happen, you know?
It's the plausible. Familiar, and we want
it. Yeah, for sure. there's a thing that I think the novels famously brought Sisko back, and I always thought that was just, that's sort of why I was never able to grab onto them. I'm not saying they're not well done. I'm not saying that the people who don't work on them don't love the property and aren't very talented. They've just never been a thing that grabbed me, because it always felt like nothing could be permanent. You know, like, everyone has to come back. Everyone has to hang out. All the people, they're only hanging out because they're characters on the show, but you all want to see them together. So here you go. And, like, you know, this doesn't have to be that, but you can still give us, you know, a scene where, you know, he runs into O'Brien and asks how Keiko and Molly are doing, you know, like, that could be cool. Like, that kind of stuff wouldn't feel natural, and it would, you know, also kind of scratch that fan service itch. And they could totally do that. And I just love that. Yeah. Like I said, I love we're in a spot where it feels like they could do it.
So we mentioned the Kelvin films and how they kind of came out of nowhere when we thought that Trek was done. They jump back in 2009 and say, hey, we're bringing back Star Trek. And because this is the only way to do it, we have to bring back the original characters, the people that started this whole franchise, not making new characters, not adapting or rebooting the characters from the 80s and 90s. Got to go all the way back in time. And they made the first film, the 2009 Star Trek film, and it was fine. It was okay. They were careful to not rewrite or change any of the history that we have with Star Trek, and they did it in a way that allowed them to tell their own story, go their own direction, and do whatever the hell they want with that universe. I thought that they did that in a very clever way, but there were still some aspects of the 2009 film that I didn't love, and a lot of other people didn't love it either. And those got worse in Into Darkness.
Did like Into Darkness? Yeah, I didn't love Into Darkness. I did love Beyond, but yeah, Into Darkness was a very 2010 era film.
Yeah, and Beyond was definitely better. My favorite moment in Beyond was when they put in just a one sentence reference to Enterprise to show that that was still in that timeline, that had not changed. And I literally clapped my hands in the theater when Idris Elba mentioned the Zindi from the third season of Enterprise.
Yeah, he does mention that, the Zindi war towards the end of the movie, yeah.
But there were still aspects of that one and the other two that I didn't love, but I think even that served as a benefit because they used these new films to bring Star Trek back into the pop culture landscape. And I think what it ended up doing is while helping to revitalize Star Trek, it also gave the fans an opportunity to say, okay, it's great that you brought these films back. This is what we like about it. This is what we don't like about it. At that point, CBS, who could make it on television where Paramount could not, CBS said, oh, you still want Star Trek? You like these films? Well, yeah, we like them, but we don't love them because they're not perfect. Well, how about we try to address some of those issues and we'll put it back on TV for you? That sounds great. Let's do it. If we didn't get the Kelvin timeline movies, I don't think that we would have Discovery.
Oh, absolutely not. No, like that showed that there's an audience and that they can, you know, that there was a big budget audience for it. And like you needed those movies to get to this step for sure.
I am not one of those people who considers Discovery to be not Trek or not real Trek or not as much Trek as the Orville. I think that is nonsense. Discovery, while it is different in tone, it's different in style than any Trek that we've gotten before. It's not because the people don't love Star Trek, the people making it. It's not they don't love Star Trek. It's not that they don't respect it. It's that the landscape of television has changed. You can't make Star Trek today the way you made it in the 80s and 90s. It wouldn't fly. You wouldn't last a season.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the Orville only, you know, it's trying to do, without even mentioning its, you know, quality or whatever, it's trying to do that kind of episodic 90s throwback Trek, and it's not doing great in the ratings, and it's not a bad show, but it's sort of like it's a much quieter show than I think, it should be to sustain itself. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you really can't do that episodic stuff anymore. Like I think Discovery season 2 especially did a really good job of mixing the serialization with the episodic content in a way that season 1 didn't. And it's the perfect evolution of what Star Trek, you know, was heading towards anyway. You know, like with Enterprise and DS9.
Exactly. With the third season of Enterprise, well, third and fourth season of Enterprise, you see shades of that in Discovery.
Oh, sure.
They have one plot element that's going to go through the entire season, and they are dealing with that every episode. Not the whole time, but it's always there in the background that they're trying to deal with. Every episode has its own individual story that's going to start and stop by, you know, within the confines of that episode. And they find ways to work in aspects of Enterprise season 4, which is you get small arcs. You'll have basically a three-part episode. For example, what happened in the Mirror Universe in season 1 of Discovery. It wasn't that entire second half of the season. It was several episodes, but that was one larger story that they told within the confines of their overall season 1 story. So they're grabbing what worked in Star Trek's past, and they're bringing it up to the present with modern special effects, modern sets, modern camera work, and a modern storytelling sensibility. And at the same time, they're also remembering that it's, you know, it's 2019. We can't just staff this ship with a whole bunch of white guys and have that not be noticed. We got to, you know, be as inclusive as we would. And it's not the people on Twitter who whine about Star Trek being quote unquote woke and being made by nothing but social justice warriors who are trying to cram diversity down our throats. What I don't understand is how those people think that with the trajectory that society is on right now in the 21st century and the understanding of basic right and wrong and basic equality, how do they think that when we get to the 23rd century, we're still going to look exactly like we look now or like we looked 20 years ago? A diverse crew, an equal crew, and tolerance for everyone, alien species, different colored humans, orientation, you name it. It comes back to infinite diversity and infinite combination, which has literally been mentioned in every episode of this show. That's what it's about, and that's what they're showing us. And the people who don't like that will claim these people are ruining Star Trek because they don't care about its history. Well, they're learning from its history, and they're changing it moving forward. So the future that Star Trek presents is more like the future that we should be aiming for now. And the people who don't like it, I don't understand them. And that's one of the things that I love about Discovery is it looks at, it's self-aware enough to see this is where we are now, this is where we want to go, let's present that in this new iteration of Star Trek. But it's a little different than Star Trek was in the 90s. That's okay, because TNG was a little bit different than TOS, and y'all learned to love that as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, those people are just, it's just a bad faith argument. They actually don't have an issue with Discovery. They're just racist or misogynistic, and they're just using Discovery as a crutch to levy their racist or misogynistic arguments. So I just don't even pay attention or give them any mind, because it's like, those people have always been there. They were there when Sisko was made captain. They were there when Janeway was made captain. They were there, you know, there's a newspaper article floating around when the TNG cast was announced, and it's just people complaining about who are these animals. And, oops, sorry. Those people have always existed. They're just, it's a bad faith argument. It's rooted in something much deeper and grosser than a distrust of Star Trek. And we're just seeing more of it now. It just amplified because we have social media. But, you know, even, you know, we had a segment on our podcast where we would look at old, Usenet comments, and those arguments were there then too. They were just as prevalent. It's just now there's more people have more access to an audience, to a voice. Mm-hmm. And they've just tapped into that audience, and they're able to amplify their opinion. But it's unfortunately nothing new for Star Trek fandom, and it's unfortunate that it still persists and will probably persist for a long time. But I do believe that there's a greater number of people that reject that and hold true to the ethos that the series has always kind of, you know, tried to, when it's working at its best, tried to stick to. And I think that they're always going to be there, especially like with some of these platforms like YouTube and stuff. They reward that kind of engagement, because it's like a net positive. Like, it doesn't matter if you're getting a hate click, you're still getting clicks. So they're just going to keep doing it. And I just try to pay them any attention, because yeah, Discovery is not going anywhere, and neither any of the other shows. And it's for the best. Like, you know, these shows are giving a Star Trek that looks like the world we live in, not the world that I mean, you know, as much as I love 90s TNG and that era, you really see how dated it is in some ways.
Oh, absolutely.
It doesn't look like the world that we lived in then. It doesn't look like the world that we lived in now. And, like, you know, it's not like trans people didn't exist in the 90s. It's not like they didn't exist in the 60s. It's just the mechanisms to talk about those things and make themselves known and be comfortable weren't there. And they are now. And, Star Trek is just trying to catch up to that. And, like, Star Trek should always be the lead dog in this stuff. And unfortunately, it hasn't been. And I think now it's figuring out that not only is it going to be, but it's going to do it better than other people, better than other shows. And, when people have a problem with that, they're showing who they are, and it sucks, but they're not going anywhere. And all we can do is ignore them and hope they figure it out. And if not, then whatever, We don't need them.
Ignoring them is the way to go, and it's also one of the hardest things to do, especially considering, like you said, they've always been around, but these days their megaphone is so huge. And yeah. not only that, but I think what might bother me the most is the folks who, not just on Twitter, but they will take it to YouTube and they will make, you know, a 3-hour video to complain about a 45-minute episode of a show.
Yeah.
Spewing nothing but hate and conjecture and just straight up lies. And because of the way YouTube works with ads and monetization, they make money from these videos, which is why they make so many.
Oh, yeah. I don't even believe a lot of them are genuine. And it doesn't matter if they are or not. It's still toxic. But the fact that their engagement is rewarded one way or the other. And when I say ignore them, what I mean is, like, don't click on their videos. Don't feel that. But, like, there's also a point where, like, you know, you have to kind of call them out and you have to sort of step up and shut them down, because they need to know that it's not – they need to know that it's not – not only is it not okay, which they probably know and don't care, they need to know that it's not accepted. And I do think there's a level in which shutting them down is important. And because at that point, depending on who you are and what they're attacking, it's not just like, you know, it's an act of self-care. It's an act of self-defense to shut these people down. And if they're attacking a group that you belong to, then you can't just sit there and do nothing, especially if you're someone who is, you know, maybe more privileged and more comfortable and in a position to kind of shut them down safely. And there's a line, I think, where, you know, the engagement is, you know, it's when I say ignore them, yeah, you have to toe that, but or just block them, you know, depending on your engagement.
I've started doing that a bit myself. I've blocked some people before, usually when their toxicity and their gatekeeping is directed at me. That will get a block on Twitter for sure. I think I've said it before, one of the quickest ways to get under my skin and probably the skin of many Star Trek fans is for a toxic fan to say, obviously you're not a Star Trek fan because you like this.
Yeah. And you know, that's such a silly thing, but that's always been there too. You know, unfortunately, that's always been like a Trekkie versus Trekkers kind of argument.
Yeah.
That stuff's just, I think, always just going to be there. There's just weird division of like nerd fandoms and the way people get this, like they attach their personalities to it in a very specific way. That's not always healthy. And I think that, when it's in a vacuum of social media, you tend not to think of the individual, and those people, you know, are very good at dehumanizing others. And it's just, yeah, I try to keep my feeds pretty pretty curated, so I don't run into a lot of that stuff. But it's possible to avoid it, unfortunately.
Yeah, it'll show up every once in a while, and while it can be difficult to call out these these toxic, despicable people, because if you try to call them out, either they're so entrenched in their view that they are unwilling to hear anything else, or they don't actually believe what they're saying. They're doing it for fun. They're doing it for money. So they will intentionally be deaf to what other people are saying because they have to keep up this character, because that's going to keep up an income stream on a YouTube channel.
That's right.
So to speak up against them is seldom very useful, because they're not the types that are going to hear what you say, internalize it, reflect on it, process it, and then change their ways.
Yeah, they're not. However, it's bad faith. They're not actually looking to engage in an argument with you. They just want to, you know, excuse to yell obscenities, basically.
Yeah. However, the key is to find the moments when standing up and calling them out and speaking against them is not the times when it's going to help change their minds, but you have to find your moments when standing up and saying so is going to positively affect others that are listening, people in the Twitter thread or in a comment section or on a podcast. Now, I have not been on a podcast with any toxic people. I'm not about to put myself through that. I got enough problems. But to stand up and call out these toxic fans, if it's going to allow someone else who is hearing it, who thinks that they are doing something wrong as a fan by liking something, if standing up is going to let them know, no, you can like whatever you want, and you're still a Star Trek fan. Stand up. If you like Discovery, stand up, be proud about it, and consider yourself a Star Trek fan just as much as anyone else is. Don't let these people trying to say that you're not get to you, because if they say you're not a Star Trek fan, they're wrong, and that's the only thing that matters. Everyone gets to decide for themselves whether or not they're a fan, and if a gatekeeper wants to make someone feel like they're not a fan, that's when you need to shut them down. Not for the gatekeeper's sake, but for the sake of those who could be swayed by them. That's when it's important. It's harder to find those moments, but when you find them, you should do your best to stand up and say so.
Yeah, I mean, deplatforming works. You know, draw attention to why these people are wrong, and, you know, do it in a way that'll keep you safe. But, you know, don't be afraid to stand up for others. But, yeah.
Exactly. Okay, I think this is a good time to take a break from the heavy, sad, somber gatekeeping talk. We're going to have some fun with some trivia.
What is this?
It's a game.
Ah, and that's fun. That's fun.
All right, let's do it.
This is the one part you don't get a choice in, because you host a DS9 podcast. You're getting DS9 questions.
That sounds good to me.
Okay, we got a name that episode quiz coming up at very difficult. It's been played 117 times as of today on this website. 117 people have taken this quiz, and the average score is 3 out of 10.
Oh, damn.
Question number one. Chief O'Brien is at Ops when he is shot with a phaser by an alien intruder. Later, after sustaining injury, a Klingon holding him hostage injures him further by kicking him back onto the floor. Are we talking about invasive procedures, tribunal, the way of the warrior, or by Inferno's light?
Jeez, that is a... I feel like it's hard because it's so vague. That happens in like every episode. I'm going to say that's invasive procedures.
All right.
I think that's the one where they try to take the guy from Gremlins 2 tries to steal the Dax symbiote.
Well, I would have said that that's when Lionel Luthor from Smallville tries to take the Dax symbiote.
Oh.
But yeah, yes, that invasive procedures is that episode, and this one, yeah, you're right. I know this is the answer. So this one, I know you're right.
Sick. All right.
Number two, Jake and Nog scheme to sell Cardassian merchandise in exchange for Latinum, but they only end up with tools before they ultimately end up with a share of land that's never seen. Are we talking about In the Cards, Progress, The Muse, or Valiant?
Progress.
Progress.
It's definitely Progress. It's the self-sealing stumble scheme. They keep one-upping they keep trading up. They're doing the thing where like they try to trade for like a one thing to get the next thing. Yeah, it's definitely Progress. Because I know okay. I know it's not In the Cards. I know it's not Valiant, and I know it's not the other one. So it just has to be Progress. It's the B plot of Progress. It's not the Muse, yeah. Because the B plot is Jake and the Muse.
All right, number three. Dr. Bashir is on board the Defiant, using a computer to track down the source of a musical composition that is first played on an instrument inside crew quarters before it's heard later in a Starfleet officer's recurring thoughts. Man, these are some wild descriptions.
This is The Sound of Her Voice. That might be the title of it, so read the titles.
All right, the options that we have are The Sound of Her Voice.
Yeah.
Equilibrium.
Sound of Her Voice,
Whispers and Ferengi Love Songs.
Yeah, 100% Sound of Her Voice.
Okay. I think you're wrong.
Oh, Quark. No.
Quark is pushing a cart and entering empty crew quarters without authorization to replicate a drink, but he is startled when that cart suddenly transforms into a very disappointed Odo. All right, are we talking about Business as Usual, Babel, If Wishes Were Horses, or Valiant?
This is either Babel or If Wishes Were Horses. It's in that season one or two era. It's Babel, because he's the reason that the ship has a problem, because he was screwing around with replicators.
Okay. Number five, Worf and Jadzia Dax are attempting to transport an alien female on board their runabout, but interference with their transporter beam results in the alien's death as soon as she materializes. Are we talking about One Little Ship, The Sound of Her Voice, In Purgatory's Shadow, or The Darkness and the Light?
I think it's One Little Ship.
Number 6, Quark fires an enemy's handheld weapon to prevent his Starfleet comrade from being shot while down on a planet, shortly after both he and his comrade escape from confinement with the help of an alien female. Is this Little Green Men, Past Tense Part 1, The Maquis Part 1, or the Jem'Hadar?
Jem'Hadar.
Jem'Hadar. Number 7, Keiko falls over a rail and onto the promenade floor shortly after calling out her husband's name. But there's nobody physically pushing her to cause her fall to happen. Is this The Assignment, Hard Time, The Begotten, or Tribunal?
God damn it. See, here's what I hate. This is one that I know we complained about how generic the episode title was because it has nothing to do with the episode. I know it's not Hard Time. I don't think it's The Begotten. It's definitely not. What was the other one? It was The Assignment, Hard Time.
The Begotten and Tribunal.
This is the one where she gets possessed by the Paw Wraith.
Yes, it is.
I guess I'm going to say it's The Assignment. It doesn't sound like it's those other ones, but I do remember specifically we complained about how generic that episode title was. Because it just describes nothing. I guess The Assignment is O'Brien's. I don't know.
All right, number 8. A handmade drawing depicting the exterior of the Deep Space Nine station is seen in this episode.
Oh, this will be tough.
The Visitor, Image in the Sand, Far Beyond the Stars.
Wishes.
Okay. Click.
Oh, wait. I wonder if that's a trick question. Because I feel like... No, I'm gonna stick with that. It's Far Beyond the Stars.
All right.
Because there's like a weird semi-sequel episode where we see What's-His-Face again. And I wonder if it's that one. I'm going to stick with that. Far Beyond the Stars is my final answer. No lifeline.
All right. All right, number 9. Dr. Bashir is slapped across the face three times by the same person while on board the station in this episode. Is it, you are cordially invited, rejoined, In Purgatory's Shadow, or Crossover?
I'm gonna say you are cordially invited.
All right, final question. A baseball is seen being held or thrown by somebody other than Captain Commander Sisko in all of the following episodes.
Oh, interesting.
Except for one. A baseball held or thrown by someone who is not Sisko. What's the one episode?
Okay.
We have Emissary, In the Cards, The Visitor, and What You Leave Behind.
One of these episodes does not have that.
Right. One of these episodes does not have someone other than Sisko holding or throwing a baseball.
I don't remember a baseball in The Visitor. So I'm going to go with that.
Okay. You have nailed 6 out of 10.
I'm so mad. Which ones did I get wrong? Oh, man.
Okay, so you were correct with invasive procedures.
Okay.
Because Tuvok as a Klingon shoots O'Brien and then kicks him in the shoulder later. And right after he kicks him in the shoulder, Sisko just beats the hell out of him.
Yeah, I remember that
guy. The next one, Jake and Nog scheme to sell Cardassian merchandise, etc., etc. And you know what? I would have gotten this one wrong because I thought it was In the Cards. But you're right. It was, in fact, Progress.
Nice.
Okay, so this one, Dr. Bashir on board the Defiant trying to track down the music, and you said The Sound of Her Voice. That is incorrect.
Oh, damn it.
The Sound of Her Voice was the episode where they were trying to track down...
It was the recording of the distress signal.
Yeah, they were talking with her over the comm system while they were trying to get to her, and she was dying, but it turns out she was already dead.
Yeah, it's been like decades or something.
There was a temporal fluctuation that was sending her signal back in time.
Yeah.
So by the time they got there, she was already gone. That was the sound of her voice. The episode you were looking for was Equilibrium, where Dax is starting to get memories from her short time as Duran Dax, the killer.
Oh, I don't remember that. I barely remember that one. You know what threw me? It was the later reoccurring thoughts. That's what threw me.
Yeah.
Tricky.
Number four, Court pushing the cart, getting the drink. That was Babel, because using that replicator is what activated the aphasia device.
Yeah, that's what made everybody lose their language.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's what kicked it off. Worf and Jadzia transporting an alien. Beam results in the alien's death. You said one little ship. One little ship is where we have a miniature runabout flying around the station in one of my least favorite episodes of Deep Space Nine in the entire series. That one is ridiculous and I hate it. But the episode you were looking for was The Darkness and the Light, where we have a scarred Cardassian civilian.
I don't remember this scene at all.
It was one of the Bajoran women who was helping the resistance cell. They beamed her up, but she had something that the killer had implanted in her that scrambled the transporter beam. She ended up being a smoking heap on the transporter pad.
I remember that now. God damn it.
Number six, when Quark shoots somebody, you were correct. That is the Jem'Hadar. Number seven, the assignment, that vague generic title. Yes. O'Brien had an assignment, which was to do this and that and the other thing. You were correct. Handmade drawing made by not Martok, but a human Martok, back in the olden days at the science fiction magazine. And he brought in a picture of, a very old school looking DS9. So you were correct on that one. That was Far Beyond the Stars. Number nine... you thought that Bashir got slapped three times in You Are Cordially Invited, which is the wedding episode.
Yeah,
Worf,
he didn't get slapped in that one.
Nope, it was Crossover.
Oh, damn. That was the first Mirror episode, wasn't it?
Yes.
Ugh, crud.
And it was our Bashir, not Mirror Bashir, but our Bashir. And as Odo, who's running the mine, is telling him the rules, he slaps him multiple times.
Oh, okay, remember that. Dang.
Yeah.
Dang it.
And finally, number 10, also incorrect. A baseball is seen being held or thrown by someone other than Sisko. The visitor is not correct. This is a pretty long paragraph that I'm not going to go through, but I'm pretty sure at some point. Yep, there it is. Old Jake, played by Tony Todd. You do see him holding the baseball near the end.
That one, that was probably the one that I felt the least confident in, so I figured I got that one wrong.
Mm-hmm. But it was in the cards
where we do not see someone else. Tricky, because it's a baseball card episode. So I just remember thinking, got to be a baseball in it.
Now in Emissary, in the pilot, on the holodeck, you see someone else, pitching.
Yeah. You see that. It was one of the prophets.
Yep. The visitor, you see old Jake holding the ball. Mm. And then, what we leave behind.
Yeah, that you see at the end with Jake, I think, or Kira.
Yeah, what you leave behind. It's Kira. Kira picks up the ball because it's still there in the office that is now her office.
Yeah.
Oh, so there it is.
That was tough.
Six out of 10. But hey, the average was 3 out of 10, so you still did better than most.
Above average, yeah. There you go. Passing grade, I'll take it. All right, I got 5 for you. I think these are relatively difficult. I think one's pretty easy. I think these are like medium. I don't know. We'll see.
We'll find out.
All right, you ready?
I am ready.
In the alternate timeline created in the Deep Space Nine episode Children of Time, who did Miles O'Brien eventually marry?
Is there going to be multiple choice?
I didn't multiple choice these, but I will list. I will do that real quick. I'll name people.
Okay, because once I hear it, I know I'll get it. Because I was listening to a discussion about this recently.
So of the choices.
Tannenbaum. Tannenbaum.
Yeah, there you go. Don't even need to read a Tannenbaum. Okay. in the TNG episode Future Imperfect, what is the name of the alien that created a series of elaborate simulations for Riker?
Barash.
Yep.
Or Barash. I don't know how it's spelled.
Yeah, Barash. Yeah.
My name is Barash.
Yeah, that's the weirdest ending ever. Very, very Twilight Zone ending. Name two of the runabouts on Deep Space Nine.
The Rio Grande, yeah. The Ganges, the Rubicon, the Orinoco.
Yeah.
Oh, I know there's another runabout name that I always like, but now being put on the spot, I can't keep them straight in my head.
Yeah, there's also the Ganges, the Gander, the Yangtze-Kiang, and the Yukon.
Oh, the Yangtze-Kiang. That was one that I always liked.
Yeah, the Yangtze-Kiang, yeah. All right, what is Ben Sisko's middle name?
Lafayette.
Yeah. And then finally, in the episode Chain of Command Part 2, while Picard is being tortured by Gol Madrid, what does the Gol feed Picard?
A raw Taspa egg.
Yep.
Or Taspar. It might be Taspar because he says it with an accent.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go for a half point. And former host of the Prime Direction, Sean Ray, head of the Cosmic Potato Podcast Network, will hopefully appreciate it when I say, actually, he loves that game. He loves the actually game. Actually, it's Gol Madrid, not Madrid.
Oh, okay. It's Leviosa, not Leviosa.
I'm such a dick.
Affirmative.
Leviosa.
Right.
Those seem like they're pretty easy off the. But yeah, you burned through those, so good job.
Almost had me with that first one. It took me a second. I won't concede the point. I'll keep it. But I almost want to say I don't deserve it because the only reason I remember it is that episode was the most recent episode of Mission Log from the Roddenberry Star Trek podcast. They discussed that one not long ago, and I just listened to it some days ago.
I can tell you that I would not have gotten the Ben Sisko's middle name or the Tannenbaum one. I had to look those up to remember who they were, so I don't think I would have gotten them if you just asked me.
Well, that was good. I like that one.
Are you prepared for the kind of death you've earned, little man?
No. I've had enough fun for today.
Agreed.
So that brings us to the end of the trivia portion. And hey, listeners, I know there's got to be at least three of you out there. If you have trivia questions that you would like to submit, then they will absolutely be folded into the trivia game that is played here on the show, with a shout out for anyone who supplies and submits questions. You'll get a shout out at the beginning and the end of the game if you want to send us questions. So go find us on Twitter at Prime Direct Pod, or check out the contact info at the end of this episode in the credits if you want to submit some questions. Now, we're in the home stretch here, Poey. We got just a few questions left.
Sure. Bring them on.
Some of these we might have already touched on a little bit. But the nice, more general questions to wrap things up on. I think we can skip over the question of asking you to reflect on where you are now in terms of your fandom.
I think we hit that, yeah.
Yeah, we've done that pretty well. You host a Star Trek podcast. I think that's a pretty good indicator of where you are in your fandom.
Yeah.
The last one, this might just be the way it's done from now on. I always forget to start the trivia game until we're almost done with the questions. Mm-hmm. And this ends up being really the only thing talked about after the trivia game, which is the last two questions rolled into one. When we look at Star Trek and its 50-plus year history, there's a lot of social viewpoints and philosophies, some that we've already touched on, but they've always been present in Star Trek. Some of them have grown and developed around the franchise of Star Trek, and some it has worked vice versa, where the Star Trek that we get these days has been shaped by the philosophies that it has embodied and shown us in decades past. Now, is there a particular lesson that Star Trek has taught you in your life as a fan, a lesson that it has planted in you that you have nurtured and now allow it to some degree, steer your life, a lesson from Star Trek? And in addition to that, can you wrap up and end this show by telling us a way in which Star Trek has made your life better?
I think the lesson would be that if we can conceive of it, like we can conceptually conceive of like a future where, people are just accepted. Mental health is stigmatized. Basic needs and like just are cared for, people are free to pursue their passions. If we can conceive of that, then it is possible on some level, even if it doesn't always feel that way, even if it feels like we won't overcome it. If the fact that we can sit down and look at this like fictional thing and like conceive of it as a thing that exists, then it, that means on some level it can happen. So a better future is possible.
It no longer becomes a question of can we do this thing. It becomes a question of how do we get there.
Yeah, because I mean, like, we can do it. Like all the answers to like the problems that we have are there. It's just teaching the empathy. Like you can teach empathy, but you can't make empathy innate. And until that can happen, it's hard to believe. But and I tend to be pessimistic, but I want to believe that on some level, like, that empathy can be just ingrained, and we can make that the default for humanity. And I don't know. It's probably not going to happen in our lifetime, but you know, maybe someday.
And even if it doesn't happen for us, what we can do is whatever possible to allow it to be a reality for those who come after.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at just the actual Star Trek timeline in the canon, in the fiction, it's they had to go through hell and back to get to where they were. So we probably will too. But you know, I try to be somewhat hopeful so that I don't collapse under the weight of a dying star of negativity, but right. You know, it's very easy to just give in to that hopelessness. And you know, it provides a goalpost, I guess, mm-hmm. for something better. And how has it made my life better? I mean, it's given me a kind of structure. I mean, like I moved out, you know, pretty far away from friends and family, and I don't have a ton. You know, I have like my girlfriend and like, but I don't have a ton of like, it's hard to make friends as an adult. And I don't have like a big social circle out here. So it's giving me a kind of like back door into a social circle, into like, you know, a connection with some of my old friends from back home, and a kind of consistent like weekly check-in where we use Star Trek as like a device to really have conversations. Something I don't think I would have had otherwise. I mean, I may have, but it's nice that it's there, I guess.
And from what you said with having difficulty making friends as an adult, and brother, preach.
It's tricky. It's just tricky. I mean, not even just like, I mean, not even just on like a level of like, you know, social awkwardness. It's just, you know, you work all day, you go home, and like, it's just hard to find time to do that stuff. Like,
right. And, you know, and when you have the time, you know, it's not like, you know, it's not like we're in our early 20s anymore, still trying to figure out who we are and using that desire to find yourself can help you, you know, connect with other people. Hey, I'm trying to figure out who I am. Well, you know what? I'm trying to figure out who I am too. Well, let's maybe spend 20 minutes and figure it out together. Cool. That's how you make connections. But now, you know, mid, late 30s, getting into the 40s, you've already pretty much established who you are. And that cement is, it might not be rock hard, but it's well on its way to being set. And it's hard to find other people socially that will fit into whatever concrete mold that you have made of yourself. So having something like Star Trek is one of those things that helps. You can connect over that. And even if you are, you know, very different from each other, that is a similarity. That is common ground that you can use to see, is this someone that can actually be my friend, or is this just someone that we have this thing in common and that'll be the end of it? You know, people can do that with, you know, football or,
oh yeah.
You know, pick any television show or any movie. You know, people can start a friendship based on liking Game of Thrones, but I think you get a leg up when it comes to Star Trek because the universe of Star Trek is so expansive. With television and movies and all of the non-canon elements, you know, even video gamers can use Star Trek as a connection because there are Star Trek video games that perhaps they've both played. You get a lot of different avenues through which you can connect with other people using Star Trek that you don't always have available with other things. Using that as a commonality, as a shared point to make connections. Definitely a big plus. And I don't think that I've heard that one on the show yet. And now, as far as lessons and philosophies that it's taught you, I'm going to give you a round of applause because I think you're the first person to give an answer different than the one before.
Oh, well, that's good.
Every episode that I've done has been the same answer. And it's a good answer, but it's the same one. And this time yours had, you know, elements of that, but it didn't take the form of simply Idic, which is, if you're going to take a lesson from Star Trek, that's one of the best you can take, is infinite diversity, infinite combination. But yours, while it had an element of that, it was the hope for the future that is also so important. And that has not been used as the answer to this question before. So I definitely appreciate and respect that. I think that answer was fantastic.
Thank you.
Especially people who read political news today, even who read reviews of Star Trek today, and all those gatekeepers that we were talking about several questions ago. Being able to keep a positive outlook and using Star Trek as a way to keep that outlook more important, I think, possibly than ever before.
Yeah, sometimes you just need a moral compass. You know, you need something to just grab onto, just to keep you grounded, I guess. And it's easy to get washed away, and, you know, and it's not quite escapism, but it is something to just recharge yourself, because it's, you know, the news cycle is rough and it just gets worse every day. And yeah, it's just a good way to, I'm thankful that it's something that is there to look to.
I want to thank my guest today, Poey Gordon, the host of Into the Wormhole, for joining us here in the wardroom to have this conversation about fandom. Poey, can you take a moment, please, and tell the listeners where they can find you elsewhere on the internet?
Thank you for having me on. This has definitely been pretty fun. You can find us Into the Wormhole, new episodes every single Wednesday on whatever podcast device you use, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Podbean, whatever podcast you use. You can also find us on Twitter at Wormhole Podcast. We also have a Patreon, patreon.com/wormholepodcast. New episodes of that every single Wednesday. You get early access to Into the Wormhole and exclusive access to our deep dive series, Star Trek Into the Wormhole Runabouts. You can find me on Twitter at ThePoey, ThePoey.
Outstanding. Ladies and gents and everyone else who's listening, stick around for the credits to hear how you can get a hold of myself or the Cosmic Potato Podcast Network at large. And join us next time in the wardroom for another episode of Prime Direction. Thank you for joining us here on the Prime Direction. Connect with our show on our Facebook page, on Twitter at Prime Direct Pod, or by email to primedirectpod@cosmicpotato.com. We're always on the watch for future guests. The Prime Direction is a proud member of the Cosmic Potato Podcast Network. Visit cosmicpotato.com for more fine podcasts. Our logos, banners, and other artwork is provided by Planet Rise Creative. Visit planetrisecreative.com or find them on Twitter at Planet Rise for more. Their graphic and visual art services are available for hire. Our music is provided by Kevin McLeod at incompetech.com, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license. This show is produced, edited, and hosted by Scott Madison. Thank you for listening.
See you.
I think I might keep that. See ya.